Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 5th day of September 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call. And I do want to start off our recap of what the heck is going on around the nation and the world today, more or less in chronological order, with a Civil War 2.0 update. But it occurs to me to call this thing civil is about as big of a whopper as you're going to find on the pages of the New York Times, or CNN calling the riots peaceful. How about a leftist call to continued insurrection update and all the violence that they've been able to foment as a result? And I really had intended to do it with a bit of compare and contrast, because I've been struck lately by how many times I saw on the alternative press videos of speeches, if you want to call it that, given by Antifa and BLM leftist unhinged outright communists calling for death, calling for burning out buildings, calling explicitly for the killing of the President of the United States and all of those who call themselves Republican. In other words, no holds barred, I'm in your face calls for violence, and we will use any means necessary to accomplish our goals, which include the destruction of what's left of the American Republic. Recent examples include Kentucky Senator Rand Paul acknowledging that he and his wife had been assaulted and almost certainly would have been beaten and perhaps killed late last week by the unhinged mob, not too far from the White House. And yet, there's been call after call after call for violence from the likes of the Jihad Squad and Mad Maxine Waters and nasty nutcase Nancy Pelosi, speaker for the traitors. Remember when over a year ago now, Mad Maxine called for exactly this kind of thing and suggested that her supporters go out and hurt people, shout them down in restaurants and make their life miserable? Well, they've escalated it ever since. CNN's been embarrassed but hardly shamed when they got caught calling the riots mostly peaceful while the reporters stood in front of burning cars with bullets in the background. And now we have speech after speech after speech by left-leaning Antifa, BLM, and other Bolsheviks openly calling for violence, death, destruction, mayhem, arson, and looting, egged on, even encouraged, by the wink-wink nudge-nudge of the waste-stream media and the deep state's puppet politicians. Did I see the headlines or even the stories on most of the waste stream left, from the New York Times and the WAPO to the Daily Mail out of the UK? No, but we certainly saw a lot about Kyle Rittenhouse, except for largely what turns out to be the truth. We'll come back to that in a bit. Still, though, the point remains. The good people are more and more rapidly getting really mad, while the bad people are already completely insane. Case in point, another headline, ironically, this one actually is from the Daily Mail, about suspect revealed. Michael Forrest Raynell, age 48, was named by the Portland Oregonian on Sunday night as the man that police are investigating for the fatal shooting of a Patriot prayer man and father of two named Jay Danielson, who was killed by Antifa Saturday night. The Daily Mail does tell us what so many other sources are also saying, that the man self-described as 100% Antifa, which seems to mean communist to the core and a killer besides, and he also took a loaded gun to a Portland protest earlier this year, although they admit the charges were mysteriously dropped on July 30th. Maybe we can guess why. Shortly after the murder, as Cassandra Fairbanks tells us for the Gateway Pundit, rioters there let their true colors shine as they cheered and celebrated the murder of that member of the Patriot Prayer Group by one of their peers. Quote, "I just got word, everybody. The person who died was a Patriot Prayer person," said the Black Lives Matter leader to the excited crowd. "He was an effing Nazi. Our community held its own and took out the trash. I'm not going to shed any tears over a Nazi dying." Unquote. And yeah, folks, but we're used to the ignorance by now. These people wouldn't know a real Nazi when they see one in the mirror. On Thursday, a warrant was issued for the 48-year-old Michael Forrest Reinoil, who appeared to admit murdering that Trump supporter last weekend in Portland in a Thursday interview with Vice. Later that evening, law enforcement saw the 48-year-old Reinhall exiting an apartment and entering a vehicle. AP reports the man pulled a gun during the incident, and as they attempted to apprehend him, said Lieutenant Ray Brady of the Thurston County Sheriff's Office, there was gunfire, and the 100% Antifa suspect was shot dead. In the Vice interview with freelance journalist Donovan Farley, Reinhold claimed he was providing security for the Black Lives Matter protest, and he says he and a friend were about to be stabbed. quote, I had no choice. I mean, I had a choice. I could have sat there and watched them kill a friend of mine of color, but I wasn't going to do that. Video from the execution scene, though, seems to contradict that. As a passerby recorded the perps saying, quote, we've got one right here. We've got a couple of them right here. Right here? Bang, bang.
Oh, oh, hey, hey, we got one right here. We got a couple right here. Right here. Hold it out. Right here.
Following which, the man turns to the scene and videos the aftermath. By the way, the man had other previous arrests, outstanding charges, and Joe Hoff, for the Gateway Pundit, asked the question, why wasn't he jailed when he was arraigned on new charges on July 30th this year? The Waystream, of course, is far more interested in seeing real constitutionalists and people who act in genuine self-defense be persecuted. Still, though, more information on the Kyle Rittenhouse case did come out this week. Also, more censorship, we'll get to that too. Via Zero Hedge and others, the report that conservative attorney Lynn Wood, who notably represented Covington Catholic High School student Nick Sandman in his defamation battle against CNN and other Waystream media, has signed on to help assemble a pro bono legal defense for Rittenhouse. As we've seen before, he slammed the Waystream media for spreading misinformation about his client and tweeted, quote, Kyle Rittenhouse acted in self-defense. Murder charges are factually unsupportable. An egregious miscarriage of justice is occurring with respect to the 17-year-old boy. Also over the weekend, as Cassandra Fairbanks reported in a separate article, the Daily Caller's Richie McGinnis appeared with Tucker Carlson Tonight to describe hearing shots fired in Kenosha before Kyle Rittenhouse, who was facing the other way, used his weapon to defend himself against the first alleged victim of violence. McGinnis told Carlson he was just feet away, maybe 10 to 12 feet behind the rioters as they ran into the parking lot to charge Rittenhouse. Quote, when I saw Rosenbaum, one of the dead men, pursuing Rittenhouse, he said, and Rittenhouse turned around, began McGinnis. Right before he turned around, I'm not sure if this is the reason he turned around, but there was a gunshot. That's actually visible on video. At that point, said the witness, he went from running away to aiming his weapon at Rosenbaum, and I was actually directly behind Rosenbaum. So he said, I took one or two steps to my right as Rosenbaum was lunging for the barrel of the rifle. At which point, said the reporter, Rittenhouse actually moved the barrel of the rifle to dodge Rosenbaum's attempt to grab it, at which point the attacker began to fall and Rittenhouse fired four shots. And at this point, said the Daily Caller's McGinnis, he attempted to provide whatever aid he could to Rosenbaum because he'd just been shot. He said he initially believed Rittenhouse had run away, but actually he had come back and pulled out his phone to call 911. And as TGP notes, there's a heck of a lot more to the story that for the most part the Waystream would rather ignore as well. As they reported on Friday, Rittenhouse was in Kenosha working as a lifeguard at the community pool. Prior to going to help, and there are plenty of photos and videos to document this, clean vandalism from off the local high school. And as she notes, this simple fact alone destroys the narrative being peddled by the Waystream media that he had, quote, crossed state lines because he wanted to come harm the rioters. More information comes from a statement released by his official legal defense team. Quote, on August 25, 2020, Kenosha spiraled into chaos following the Jacob Blake shooting. The Kenosha mayor and Wisconsin governor failed to provide a basic degree of law and order to protect the citizens and community buildings in Kenosha. The city burned as mobs destroyed buildings and property, and looters stole whatever they wanted. Rioters defaced storefronts, the courthouse, and many other public and private locations across the city, said John M. Pierce for Pierce Bainbridge, in a statement that Information Liberation, among others, was able to publish. After Kyle finished his work that day as a community lifeguard in Kenosha, he wanted to help clean up some of the damage, so he and a friend went to the local public high school to remove graffiti by rioters. And later in the day, they received information about a call for help from a local business owner whose downtown Kenosha auto dealership was largely destroyed by mob violence. The business owner needed help to protect what he had left of his life's work, including two nearby mechanics shops. So Kyle and a friend armed themselves with rifles, which, by the way, did not come from out of state. The gun, in fact, belonged to his friend, who was a Wisconsin resident, and they headed to the business premises. The weapons were in Wisconsin already and never crossed state lines. Upon arrival, says the statement, Kyle and others stood guard at the mechanic shop across from the auto dealership to prevent further damage or destruction. Later that night, substantially after the city's 8 p.m. curfew expired, without consequence, the police finally started to attempt to disperse a group of rioters, and in doing so, they maneuvered a mass of individuals down the street towards the auto shops. Kyle and others on the premises were verbally threatened and taunted multiple times as the rioters passed by, but Kyle never reacted. His intent was not to incite violence, but simply to deter property damage and use his training to provide first aid to injured community members. Later on, the statement continues, after Kyle believed the threat of further destruction had passed, he became increasingly concerned about injured protesters and bystanders congregating at a nearby gas station, with no immediate access to medical assistance or help from law enforcement, so he headed in that direction with a first aid kit, seeking out injured persons, rendering aid, and trying to guide people to others who could assist to the extent that he could do so amidst the chaos. By the time he returned to the gas station and assured himself that there were no more individuals who needed assistance, police had advanced their formation and blocked what would have been his path back to the mechanic's shop. He then complied with police instructions not to go back and returned to the gas station until he learned of the need for help to protect a second mechanic shop further down the street, where property destruction was imminent and no police were nearby. At which point he was accosted by multiple rioters who recognized that he'd been attempting to protect a business the mob wanted to destroy. The outraged rioters created a mob now determined to hurt Kyle. They began chasing him down. Kyle attempted to get away, but he could not do so quickly enough. And upon the sound of a gunshot behind him, Kyle turned and was immediately faced with an attacker lunging toward him and reaching for his rifle. He reacted instantaneously and justifiably with his weapon to protect himself, firing and striking the attacker. The rest, folks, most of us have seen on video. He fled down the street for his safety and his survival, whereupon another attacker struck Kyle from behind, and he turned as the mob pressed in on him and fell to the ground. Another attacker kicked him while he was on the ground, yet another bashed him over the head with a skateboard. Several rioters tried to disarm him. In fear for his life and concerned that the crowd would either continue to shoot at him or even use his own weapon against him, Kyle had no choice but to fire multiple rounds towards his immediate attackers, striking two, including one armed attacker, at which point the rest of the mob began to disperse. Hey, and imagine that. It seems, folks, that an armed victim tends to have that effect. And contrast this with what we're seeing from the real violent types. Kyle got up, went in the direction of police officers with his hands in the air, attempted to contact multiple police officers, but it says they were more concerned with the wounded attackers. They did not take Kyle into custody at that time, but instead indicated he should keep moving. He fully cooperated both then and later that night when he turned himself in to the police in his hometown of Antioch, Illinois. And here's something, folks, that would have once been obvious when we were a free country with a rule of law and a bill of rights. Kyle did nothing wrong, said his attorneys. He exercised his God-given constitutional common law and statutory right to self-defense. However, continued the statement, in a reactionary rush to appease the divisive, destructive forces currently roiling this country, prosecutors, sick, in Kenosha, did not engage in any meaningful analysis of the facts or any in-depth review of available video footage, some of which shows that a critical state's witness was not even at the area where the shots were fired. This was not a serious investigation, says the attorney, and I would have to add correctly. Rather, after learning that Kyle may have had conservative political viewpoints, they immediately saw him as a convenient target who they could use as a scapegoat to distract from the Jacob Blake shooting and the government's abject failure to ensure basic law and order to citizens. And within 24 to 36 hours, he was charged with multiple homicide counts, and including the ludicrous to the point of being asinine charge of murder in the first degree. The statement went on to say that Kyle Rittenhouse has, quote, the best legal representation in the country, with help from Nicholas Sandman attorney L. Lynn Wood, Pierce Bainbridge, and multiple top-tier criminal defense lawyers. They've already been successful in working with the public defender to obtain a several-week continuance of his extradition hearing to September the 25th, which at least partially, they note, slows down the rush to judgment by a government and media determined to assassinate his character and destroy his life. They intend to take the case to trial and win an acquittal on the grounds of self-defense before a jury of his peers. And here's the really damning conclusion to this whole thing, folks. said Pierce, a 17-year-old child should not have to take up arms in America to protect life and property. That should have been, anyway, the job of state and local governments. However, those governments have failed, and law-abiding citizens have no choice but to protect their own communities as their forefathers did at Lexington and Concord in 1775. Kyle is not a racist nor a white supremacist. He's a brave, patriotic, compassionate, law-abiding American who loves his country and his community. He did nothing wrong. He defended himself, which is a fundamental right of all Americans, given by God, and at least once, folks, protected by law. I guess we'll see whether that's still true or not. Back to Pierce, who says he's now in the crosshairs of institutional forces that are much more powerful than him, but he will stand up to them and fight not only for himself, but for all Americans and their beloved Constitution. Says his attorney, we will never leave his side until he is victorious in this fight. Unquote. And all I can add is this. When it comes to good versus evil, folks, the battle lines have been pretty clearly drawn. Earlier in the week, too, the president weighed in on the scapegoating of Kyle Rittenhouse. Asked by one of the usual sycophants whether he would, quote, defend the actions of vigilantes like Kyle Rittenhouse, he said this.
We're looking at all of it. That was an interesting situation. You saw the same tape as I saw, and he was trying to get away from them, I guess, it looks like. And he fell, and then they very violently attacked him. And it was something that we're looking at right now, and it's under investigation. But I guess he was in very big trouble. He would have been, he probably would have been killed, but it's under investigation.
The president also appeared in a one-on-one interview with Fox News' Laura Ingraham, in which he said that somebody got on a plane and traveled to the Republican National Convention last week, evidently with mayhem in mind. At least he acknowledged they're not being controlled by Joe Biden, who's arguably too senile to control much of anything. Instead, the president put it this way.
And Biden, well, Biden is, I don't even like to mention Biden because he's not controlling anything.
Who do you think is pulling Biden's strings? Is it former Obama officials?
People that you've never heard of. People that are in the dark shadows. People that...
Oh, what does that mean? That sounds like conspiracy theory. Dark shadows.
No, people that you haven't heard of. They're people that are on the streets. They're people that are controlling the streets.
Because, as you recall, groups of thugs were filmed harassing and then chasing attendees following the event, including Senator Rand Paul and his wife.
We had somebody get on a plane from a certain city this weekend, and in the plane it was almost completely loaded with thugs wearing these dark uniforms, black uniforms with gear and this and that. They're on a plane. I'll tell you sometime, but it's under investigation right now. But they came from a certain city. And this person was coming to the Republican National Convention. And there were like seven people on the plane like this person. And then a lot of people were on the plane to do big damage. They were coming from
planning for Washington.
Yeah, this is all happening.
But the money is coming from somewhere.
Money is coming
from
some very stupid rich people that have no idea that if their thing ever succeeded, which it won't, they will be thrown to the wolves like you've never seen before.
Oops, writes Jack Posobiec after the interview, Trump wasn't supposed to talk about the plane yet. Still, folks, given the rate of dissent, I can't say that I blame him. By Friday, as more information about paid protesters, traveling agitators emerged, Eric Blair for the Gateway Pundit was reporting that at least one Black Lives Matter protester, who was arrested at the riots in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, had also been at riots in Portland, Oregon and Kenosha, Wisconsin. Confirming a number of reports that protesters are being funded by outside agents in order to hurt the president's chances of re-election, as well as destroy what's left of the Constitutional Republic. The story quotes the Daily Mail, who said he'd been working as a senior engineer at Microsoft until May, are we surprised, but then left the company and has been on the road supporting BLM ever since. He was arrested in June in Portland for interfering with a police officer, let go without bond, then again arrested in Portland on the same charge, along with disorderly conduct this time, let go again. In Kenosha, he was stopped by police and his van searched, although it's not clear what happened after that. Regardless, though, prosecutors are, of course, not pursuing the case. Because what's the worst that could happen? Oh, yeah, exactly what's been happening and will keep on happening. From there, we'll continue with the theme that lawlessness abounds, but at least on occasion, the truth tends to kind of peek out. We saw that earlier in the week when the CDC report about how there were really only 6% of the deaths, just slightly over 9,000, for which COVID-19 was the only actual cause mentioned. The rest had a whole variety of comorbidities, meaning they were already in the process of dying anyway. At first, stories on places like the Gateway Pundit, even if some were retweeted by the president, were squelched. And it took a couple of days until the dam burst, when various local outlets began to pick up on the fact that the CDC has even admitted now that 94% of so-called COVID-19 deaths actually had underlying medical conditions, or, more appropriately, those pesky comorbidities they don't want you to hear about, the things that really killed people, and maybe, or maybe not, COVID just pushed them over the edge. People like Dr. Ron Paul have been weighing in on it as well, noting that a vast majority, on average, had 2.6 serious additional diseases in addition to testing positive for COVID, or maybe just being presumed to have had it, and in most cases, they were of extreme advanced age. Asked Dr. Ron Paul, is it time to begin litigating the damage done to the U.S. and the world from the lockdown policies? Arguably, well, past time, but given that the law really doesn't mean much anyway, and it's the same evil people in the courts and the executive mansions pushing all of this, it's also a waste of time. Joe Hoff, for the Gateway Pundit, notes the irony here, asking, now that Fox, ABC, and CBS articles have all appeared on COVID-19, mirroring our report, which was retweeted by President Trump, about the shocking number of comorbidities and how only 6% of people actually died from COVID-1984 alone, will Twitter and CNN attack them, or just double down? Maybe we should look to the leftist version of the WAPO in the UK, the Daily Mail, for an answer. They do have lots better pictures, though. And their headline gives us a clue. Neighbors star Stephanie McIntosh falsely claims that the COVID-19 plandemic, and they don't spell it right, is a cover-up. Who could imagine such a thing? Oh, well, they call her a D-lister, saying, as more D-list celebrities share conspiracy theories. Uh-oh, they're just falling back on the same old, same old. And yes, it begins, the former star of Neighbors has joined the ranks of Australian celebrities spreading misinformation about the coronavirus pandemic on socialist media. The LA-based actress, age 35, who rose to fame playing Skye Mangle on the long-running soap, promoted debunked conspiracy theories on her Instagram stories on Monday. They're, of course, only debunked by the liars in the waystream media. The mother of two shared three posts that falsely suggested the health crisis was being used to cover up other deaths in the U.S. See how cleverly they sidestepped that one? Before encouraging her fans to follow disgraced celebrity chef Pete Evans, who they also proceed to diss big time, because, among other things, he's blamed the health crisis on 5G, and that, of course, is very verboten. And listen to this, quote, the former MKR star is a COVID-19 denier, booga, 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 and he recently lost his $800,000 a year job at Channel 7 because of his dangerous and unscientific views. And yeah, basically the Daily Mail saying, let that be a lesson to you. Not only will you lose your big-time, high-paying job for daring to buck the official narrative, but we'll pile on and kick you when you're down, too. They even post a high-res picture of the guy wearing a MAGA hat, so you know right there they hate him. And it's captioned this way, and I'll quote the whole thing. Oddball. Evan's central belief is that food is medicine. How dare he say such an unscientific thing? Oh, back to the quote here, and that by following a paleo diet, people can develop superhuman immune systems that can withstand all illnesses, including, who could have imagined such a thing, COVID-19. Are you ready, folks? They're not done yet. Quote, there is absolutely no scientific basis for this. Unquote. And what a crock of bullshit. The truth is, our immune system isn't superhuman. It's super impressively designed by the Creator because we're human. And basically, he's right. All we need to do is just quit trying to destroy it. But here the Daily Mail, as I've already alluded to, lies through their teeth, saying Evan's central belief that food is medicine and that by following a decent diet, you can improve your immune system really seems to rankle the leftist guardians of truth. Quote, there is absolutely no scientific basis for this. Following a particular diet does not make a person less likely to contract the deadly respiratory virus. Unquote. But they're not done yet. They say, meanwhile, other reality stars have also been spreading COVID-19 conspiracy theories during the pandemic. Maybe they've even had enough, folks, and decided to search out the truth for themselves. And they list some really egregious ones, like a woman from Married at First Sight named Amanda Micheleff, who recently called for people in Melbourne to stop wearing face masks after they were made compulsory following a surge in cases. Why, some of these conspiracy theorists are even concerned about atrocities committed against children. And you'd think by now that at least the Brits would know that's not a conspiracy theory. Which takes us to the bottom of the hour break, but we've got a lot more right after this. America's counting on you, and I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point to life without liberty, so I'll stand for what's right. I'll give my hand to the youth, I'm the producer, make a bow for the new revolution. Welcome back again now to the second segment for this evening. This is your host, Mark Call. And let's start this segment off with a bit of comic relief. It'd be funnier if it wasn't so tragic. We're used to people running for president with no integrity, but now, no brain? The senile one, creepy quid pro Joe Biden, had this to say on Tuesday night. He was given scripted answers to the questions prior to what they were trying to call an interview, loaded onto his teleprompter by his handlers because he can't remember them on his own. But he keeps forgetting he's not supposed to read certain parts.
What's the president doing? Look, Venezuela's top line message is President Trump's policy is an abject failure.
Yeah, top line message is for you, Joe. You're not supposed to read that. It tips everybody off. And just to show you how bad he's getting, even the UK's Daily Mail thought this one was a bit over the top. Why, they even went so far as to fact check him.
We got a, for example, why in God's name don't we teach history in history classes? A black man invented the light bulb, not a white guy named Edison.
Come on, man. I was there. I don't remember much nowadays, but I remember that. And why don't we teach history in history class? Well, you just heard it, because we don't want you to know the truth. And by the way, just so we're clear here, that's downright asinine, because there are a whole lot of things that were invented, but not patented, often because they couldn't make it work. People tried to fly long before the Wright brothers. The principle that was enshrined in patent law was called reduction to practice. For the longest time, you actually had to provide a model showing that your idea wasn't just out there, but that it would actually work. And if you've ever heard the story, it took over 1,000 tries before Thomas Edison and his crew, working in the lab, found a suitable filament that wouldn't burn out when they heated it with electricity to incandescence. You know what? At least one of the people who worked in Tom's lab was black. Long before affirmative action, and you'd think they'd give him credit for that. And back when history really was taught in the schools, you might have heard this quote. As Thomas Edison put it, genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. No wonder they don't want to talk about that in the schools. And this just came out, too. Back during Obama's first term, a Secret Service agent got suspended for a week in 2009 for shoving the VP after the man cupped his girlfriend's breast while they were trying to take a photo with him. The situation got heated. Others had to step in to prevent the agent from hitting then-Vice President Biden. Judicial Watch filed a FOIA request for information on the incident, and they have just been told that the file was destroyed. They basically called it kind of a backdoor confirmation. Maybe he's got some of Team Hitler helping him out this year. I guess the point here is that Biden was a liar and an idiot, and it's been obvious for years he was a creep, long before he got to be senile. Don't forget how he helped cover up mass murder at a church in Waco, and has always been a violator of his oath of office when it comes to the Bill of Rights. A piece from Zero Hedge this week says that New Jersey is now becoming the most hated state, and it's a tough contest, folks, given California, New York, Michigan, and a whole bunch of other contenders for most socialists in America with a K, as households there also are fleeing in record numbers. As major cesspool cities go, though, word is that you can't buy or even steal a U-Haul to escape from New York. This piece from Gary Barnett via LouRockwell.com pretty well summarizes a lot of things we talk about here regularly. The economic destruction of 2020 due to the almighty state's COVID-1984 response will pale in comparison to what's obviously coming. He's talking about economics primarily and notes that the country has gone through literal hell this year due to policies put in place allegedly to combat the deadly plandemic. But considering the history and current numbers, total deaths, total cases, and all the great big whoppers surrounding all of those, the plandemic has been shown to be a fraud, even if much of the CNN-watching public is still woefully ignorant of the truth, which doesn't bode well if the trend is not reversed. We've already got greater than Great Depression levels of unemployment and business failures. Throw in rioting, looting, and general lawlessness, and it could start to look even uglier than it already does. And, of course, we've got the biggest increases in money printing and the corresponding debt bubble, arguably in human history. The biggest threat we now face, he notes, is the coming fall and winter, since we're not only set up for major food price increases, approaching even famine levels, but the flu season itself will most likely be much worse than normal due to the purposeful weakening of the immune systems of most Americans. Think dumbed down, GMO frankenfooded out, and masked up. The setup's already in place, and the planned next wave is set to launch over the next few weeks. So, having set the stage, let's move on to the election fraud update, or the continuing coup. And as even some of the rigged polls are now showing the president with a considerable lead over his senile opponent, for reasons that ought to be beyond obvious but surprisingly aren't, but interestingly, more and more polls are showing that black voters are beginning to turn to the Republicans in droves. More and more are saying they're not going to stay on the plantation, it would seem. The far left has rolled out their coup contingency plan, and the waste stream is pushing it like, well, there's no tomorrow. Here, for example, the New York Times spin from yesterday. The headline is all you need to hear, really. This is the Democrats' doomsday scenario for election night. What, it said, if early results in swing states on November 3rd, as well as everything else outside of the riot areas and communist enclaves, show President Trump ahead, and he declares victory before heavily Democratic mail-in votes, yeah, like 99% of the 80 million or so, which he has falsely linked with fraud, are fully counted. Now it's obviously more clear why Hitlery et al. Are saying, don't concede, Joe, under any circumstances. That is, if you still remember what the word concede even means by then. Well, don't worry, folks. They're spinning that one and trying to get everybody preconditioned for what they've got planned. Here's the Salon spin on the same narrative. Democratic data firm warns Trump may lead in a landslide before losing once all of the faked mail-in ballots are finally counted. And they'll drag that out as long as they can, too. And the reason this is a problem, they say, is because more than half of Joe Biden's supporters intend to vote by mail, probably from their basements, folks. And a whole lot of them, no doubt, from graveyards. And they'll be joined by their pets, too, in voting for the senile one en masse. But no, there's no evidence of fraud now. You'll be banned from socialist media if you dare to even hint at that. And we'll get there in just a second. First, though, from Sarah Carter, who tells us that Representative Jody Heiss of Georgia revealed what he believes the Democrats are up to stop the president by any means necessary because, quote, they know he's going to be reelected. And here, folks, your host interjects, as I have before, that in order for that to happen, it's also got to be by a big enough landslide that the electronic fraud isn't sufficient to carry the day. And it's pretty obvious by now it'll be an even bigger margin than that. Remember that Hillary Clinton claimed a popular vote victory, yeah, sure, of 3 million or so nationwide. And later data that I talked about here on this show suggested there were at least 3 million votes that were purloined. It's been done before, says the piece. In the 2016 election, it was Russia, 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 based on the fake dossier on Trump and his campaign, which was used to violate all kinds of laws and commit sedition, leading to treason, where the Obama regime and its henchmen lied to the FISA court, and the FBI orchestrated the cover-up. Sarah Carter was among those who were first on the story, says her website, and the facts are still coming to light, even as U.S. Attorney John Durham wraps up his investigation, although it's possible that if the left continues to be successful in stonewalling anything and everything associated with the effort, it won't come out before November. 4 years later, though, Democrats are pushing for sweeping changes to the format of the 2020 election to make what was already rampant fraud even more rampant, claiming that in order to mitigate the spread of the booga 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 virus, states will need to hold sweeping mail-in elections, which is not to be confused at all with absentee voting. Instead, it means qualified voters will receive ballots without a request or even a legitimate reason, like being out of the country. Said Representative Heiss to Carter, "I believe this is part of what the Democrats want. They want to throw into question the validity of the upcoming election." Ding, ding, ding. Give the man a prize. Because he said they know they're in trouble. President Trump is going to be reelected, and now they're trying to set the stage for, quote, questioning the validity of the outcome and to set it up where at least there are potentials for thousands of lawsuits to delay this thing and to just create as much muddy water as they possibly can, unquote. He pointed to the election of Representative Carolyn Maloney of New York, who now chairs the House Oversight and Government Reform, SICK, committee, noting that it took 6 weeks to count all the ballots there, and there were literally thousands of mail-in ballots disqualified from that election. Your host, of course, referred to that kind of massive fraud back then as a beta test, and they seem to have honed the technique in the interim, which caught the attention of President Trump last month, who suggested there should be a do-over in that case. Many states that have already implemented vote-by-mail fraud elections have said that at least 10% of those mailed ballots aren't even counted. It's ripe for fraud, he suggested. Quote, "So we're talking tens of millions of ballots. The number I've heard, folks, is about 80 million that will be going to people perhaps who are deceased," he said, "who have moved, like the example you just gave. These ballots are going to be good going out. The Democrats already in the so-called HEROES Act they passed over 3 months ago forbid states from having any kind of voter ID," he explained. "So we have these mail-out ballots being sent by the millions and tens of millions with no voter ID, as you referenced, and they're going to be going to someone's address. They'll be filled out, and we have no way of checking who is filling them out. And then they have the ballot harvesting nationally, which is a recipe for absolute disaster in destroying the integrity of the American election system." And he nails this one, folks, saying, quote, "That is precisely what the Democrats are pushing for." A related story from Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit. Attorney General William Barr went on with Wolf Blitzer on the Criminally Negligent Network Wednesday, and during the discussion, Blitzer tried to defend the deep state slash Bolshevik revolution plan to send out tens of millions of ballots to voters this fall for the general election. And Blitzer obviously thinks this is just fine and acceptable and, of course, will further their goals. Whereupon Barr went off. And the Attorney General said, quote, "Now what we're talking about is mailing them to everyone on the mailing list when everyone knows the lists are inaccurate. People who should get them don't get them, which is one of the major complaints in states who have tried this. And people who get them are not the right people." Well, I guess, folks, it depends on what the meaning of the right people is. They don't necessarily even have to have a pulse, you know. Quote, "Sometimes multiple ballots go to the same address. You think that's any way to run a vote?" Unquote. And he went on to say, "It's absolutely insane to push this fraudulent system when the country is already so divided at this time." Unquote. And true, but you realize, of course, that is the point. There is far more, however, to the biggest plan for election fraud in this nation's history. From hedge fund tips and Zero Hedge to Facebook, and billionaire CEO Mark Zuckerberg has now announced more restrictions on political advertising. And guess who they're going to focus on? And they're promising to weed out any claims of a false victory by the man who they will not allow to be reelected. The hedge fund tip story begins with a bit of the history. Those of us who don't get our news from MSNBC and CNN and the New York Times and WAPO have heard it all before. And now, even though leftist Facebook is being slammed by those on the far left as being not far enough left and not censoring enough of the constitutional alternative viewpoints, it's trying to show just how much woker they now are. In the face of an advertising boycott and mounting political pressure, few have more to lose, it says, if Biden triumphs than Zuckerberg. The company is once again caved. I don't like that term, especially in this case, but it does give you the tone. The old story of Brer Rabbit and Don't Throw Me in the Briar Patch, I think, comes a lot closer to the truth. And they've ceded to critics yet another draining concession via their advertising business, not for the first time. In a statement to the press on Thursday morning, Zuckerberg said to Facebook would block any new political ads during the final week of the election, and they've developed a process for suppressing any what they call premature claims of victory on the platform. No, he said, this election is not going to be business as usual, citing the acknowledged difficulties of voting during a plandemic.
I love it when a plan comes together.
And listen to this total line of BS as well as constitutional illiteracy. Quote, I'm worried that with our nation so divided and election results potentially taking days or even weeks to be finalized, there could be an increased risk of civil unrest across the country. Yeah, it's the plan. And, he added, our democracy, sick, is strong enough to withstand this challenge and deliver a free and fair election. Well, maybe free of fairness election is closer to the truth. And when it comes to the expectations now being fostered by the far left, the deep state, and the likes of Gulag to Facebook, Twitter, and the other socialist media platforms, concerning the fact that they want to make darn sure the election results aren't available on election night, Zuckerberg said, quote, it's important that we prepare for this possibility in advance and understand that there could be a period of intense claims and counterclaims as the final results are counted, unquote, which is why they're setting up, folks, to make darn sure that any claims of election fraud by the wrong people are pre-discounted. And to ensure that no fraudulent claims of premature victory are promulgated on Facebook, a ludicrous notion, says the piece, that's been propagated by the press and what they laughably call the intelligence community without, as the left likes to say, a shred of evidence, to Facebook will partner with Reuters, the leftist financial newswire service, to ensure the integrity, sick, of election night results. And this last comment is kind of funny, almost sounds like it could have come from the Babylon Bee. Finally, to Facebook will take steps to protect election officials from threats of violence during the vote counting process, however long it takes. Wonder if that includes arrests for fraud, bribery, and corruption. Anybody remember Brenda Snipes, the absolutely positively beyond corrupt county supervisor of elections for Broward County, Florida? Well, if you don't, unless you use the precise name in Broward County, you'll have a heck of a time finding anything specific about her and that kind of criminality via a Google search. Because if you just look for election fraud and the like, almost anything surrounding her has been deep-sixed. I literally had to pull out my notes to find the name, and the only things that came up were local sources, like the Sun Sentinel. Almost anything surrounding her and the massive voter rigging by high-profile Democrats seems to have been purged from the searches. So yeah, color me beyond suspicious, but it's not like we haven't been seeing this for quite a while. And we're going to see more. Well, at least it's going to happen a lot more, whether we see it or not. Meanwhile, though, the piece concludes, too, Facebook will continue to swiftly remove any what they call misinformation about the voting process and let your imagination go wild on that one. But it probably means, at a minimum, for example, don't you dare mention names like Brenda Snipes. But please, concludes the piece, don't accuse us of spreading misinformation. But wait, folks, there's more that you're not going to be allowed to talk about on to Facebook. They have now declared Kyle Rittenhouse's actions to be mass murder and will not, say pieces from the likes of Breitbart and InfoWars, also now heavily censored, allow any posts in support of the young man that they want to see railroaded. And the way we're headed, that might include a guillotine. To Facebook, says the story, and yeah, folks, they spelled it wrong, is officially designating the actions of Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old who allegedly killed two people and wounded another in Kenosha, Wisconsin. What we do see is what looks like self-defense, but hey, here's the point. He was mobbed and attacked by rioters. They're calling it a mass murder, despite the fact that this has not yet been proven in court, and that's kind of an understatement. He hasn't yet even been heard in court. But Facebook has confirmed that they will remove any posts that support Rittenhouse. Mark Dice, conservative author and YouTube personality, reported that his two Facebook page had received a threat of suspension after he dared to post a video of Rittenhouse offering to give medical assistance to wounded protesters in Kenosha shortly before the shooting. Dice, who also posted the video on Twitter, where they haven't yet removed it, but no doubt we'll get around to it, said, quote, Facebook just removed a video I posted showing Kyle Rittenhouse offering help to a wounded protester in Kenosha. Which brings us finally to today's COVID-19 totalitarianism update, starting in the far left and far west state of Hawaii, where the wannabe dictator is rolling out mandatory COVID-19 checkpoints on a major Oahu highway, with no doubt, as Mike Adams puts it, mandated vaccines and quarantine camps soon to follow. The formerly free state of Hawaii is turning the H3 freeway on Oahu into a mandatory COVID-19 roadblock checkpoint, blocking traffic in both directions and subjecting travelers to mandatory testing, reports Hawaii News Now, meaning that Hawaii is rapidly being transformed into a medical police state, which will soon morph, undoubtedly as per plan, into mandatory quarantine camps like we're already seeing rolled out in Australia and New Zealand. They're setting up inside the Hirano Tunnel in both directions of traffic to, as HNN puts it, maximize the number of individuals who will be tested. Then they go on to explain a bizarre requirement that people who have been tested are not allowed to exit the H3 freeway until they reach the very end. Yeah, it sounds, folks, like we don't care where you want to go. You'll go where we tell you to, if we let you, when we let you. Said the dictatorial mayor of Honolulu, Kirk Caldwell, "Let's get real. We are at war. We're on a war footing now in fighting this virus. We don't have all the tools, but we're building more. Ut today is about building those tools." Notes Adams, "The new testing kits that have just been announced claim they can produce test results in mere minutes rather than days. Hey, folks, I can flip a coin and give you a better answer in mere seconds. But the accuracy of these test kits," he says, "may be even worse than the really bad numbers we've already seen with lots of false positives, resulting in a wave of such that wrongly convict people of being COVID-19 carriers even when they don't have the virus." But remember, that still furthers the deep state agenda. Case in point, on to the Soviet Socialist Republic of Australia, where it's arguably already way too late for the people there to do anything about what's already on top of them. Says a piece from Prison Planet and Paul Joseph Watson, "The Australian police are paying home visits to at least 80 people, having warned them that they will be arrested if they dare to think the Australians have a First Amendment, i.e. if they protest against the lockdown or against any of the coming mandates." This follows the controversial arrest, put it mildly, of a pregnant woman over one of her Facebook posts, after which the Australian Gestapo defended the move, saying they paid over 80 home visits to people warning them they'll be arrested likewise if they attend anti-lockdown protests. 28-year-old Zoe Bueller was handcuffed and arrested in her home in Ballarat in front of her children on Wednesday because she used to Facebook to organize what was called a Freedom Day anti-lockdown protest in her hometown. Authorities said they were satisfied that police had acted reasonably, well, in terms of the new normal anyway, and Bueller was charged under Section 321G of the State's Crime Act, 1958, although the president of the Victorian Bar did say she was concerned about the arrest. Since the woman was pregnant and arrested in her home in front of her partner and children, and it's just possible that the actions of the police appeared disproportionate to the threat she presented. Gee, do you think? And listen carefully to this, quote, "The Victorian Bar is concerned that the enforcement response to Ms. Bueller's conduct is apparently at odds with other reported and more measured responses by authorities to organizers or promoters of similar protests." Well, not that similar, folks. "It would seem," says Watson, she's referring to Black Lives Matter protests that are hardly similar because they're about totalitarianism rather than freedom. Anyway, other similar protests planned or carried out in contravention of public health directives, unquote. Some protesters clearly are more equal than others. Now, I want to follow that up with a really interesting story that came via Alex Jones and a man who reported from the state of Queensland at a place called the Sunshine Coast, north of Brisbane, where his sister sits on the local council of Sunshine Coast, and he notes it's a similar position to the American city council member, but under the British system, they actually have more power and authority, well, at least they did, than Americans might realize. Thus, they're a greater threat, and just like the game of whack-a-mole, when they speak up, they need to be pounded down. Which is why, he says, when she was in a store not wearing her mask, and as a council member she's been actively opposed to the totalitarian lockdown measures, she was literally snatched at the store and taken to a camp called the Western Barracks in the western part of Australia by something called the Australian SAS Regiment, which historically has not been used this way against citizens. It is, however, he says, very much like the British SAS, which was used against the IRA in Northern Ireland similarly. And for listeners in the United States, the man noted, This would be the equivalent of using military force recon units or Delta Force to go after American citizens. Oh, wait a minute. Come to think of it, under the Clinton regime, they did use Delta Force, although they didn't talk about it openly, to kill a bunch of people in Waco, Texas at a church. His sister was held at the Campbell Barracks for 3 full weeks, incommunicado, and has now allegedly been released, arguably under pressure from the U.S. consulate via the State Department, perhaps because she too has joint Australian and U.S. citizenship. These people are scared, continued the reporter, and they intend to leave Australia and return to the United States. The question, obviously, is how long until similar totalitarian measures being beta-tested now and released there make their way across the Pacific to places like the fully prepared left coast. We'll wrap up today with a few words from the man known as Doomer Doug, who says, "Open civil war is now upon us as of the end of August." And since he lives on the left coast in the Portland area, the guy has a front row seat. With only just a bit over 2 months to go, though, until the election rigging goes front and center, and along with it the virtually inevitable riots, the rest of the nation will probably have that front row seat soon enough. Be prepared.